Hello, my name's Richard Fannell, and today I'll be talking about using TFS for development groups that are not necessarily running Microsoft Visual Studio. I'm a Microsoft Most Valued Professional for the Visual Studio ALM range. I'm an ALM Ranger, which means I help Microsoft write best practice documentation for the use of TFS, and I'm also the Engineering Director of Black Marble. Black Marble are a Microsoft Gold partner for ALM. We're based in the north of England, where we work on a variety of projects. We are a development shop working in a variety of platforms, predominantly collaboration. So we work a lot with BizTalk and SharePoint. But much of our work of late has been moving towards the use of Surface, Touch, and mobile devices. As the engineering director, my role involves making sure we're using the right technology to deliver the best solutions to our clients. I also consult in the use of TFS ALM and spend much of my time out with our customers who we're doing joint developments with and clients who just want to have a look at the opportunities that they have for the latest ways of doing development. And this is where I tend to meet a lot of clients who aren't just working in a Microsoft stack. They work in a whole variety of things. Today, if your product has to target mobile devices, you're probably looking at writing in for iOS, you're looking at writing for Android, as well as writing for Phone 7. These are three completely different languages. You have to pull all of this development effort back together. This can be done with TFS. You'll see on the screen at the moment the standard TFS stadium graphic. It's probably hard to see a TFS presentation where it's not shown. We have at the center the Team Foundation server, which is effectively a collection of web services and SQL stored procedures. Wrapped around that, we have all of its core functionalities. The orange area, we're talking about work items for tracking requirements, project management, test cases. We have source control, we have build automation, and because everything's stored in one unified SQL store, we have the ability to report completely across the system. So we can look at reporting from the initial requirements coming in to the success of builds, to code churn, to all sorts of different things. That's all customized using a process template, the white layer. Some process templates are shipped out the box. We get an Agile template, a CMMI template, and you can download a Scrum template for 2010. And with the Dev 11 version of the products, all that three are shipped as standard. But you can also customize these templates so they match your own requirements. But customizing the process template isn't enough. People have to actually use tools to talk to TFS. On this slide, it shows a somewhat Microsoft-centric view. It assumes that most of your devs are going to come in via Visual Studio. Here we show the 2010 SKU, so they've got Ultimate, Premium, Professional. And we have Test Professional, the MTM product that will be used by testers. But we also have Office users coming in on the left, surfacing information via SharePoint and using the Expression toolset for connecting for design-orientated work. All of these tools are supported via TFS. So already you can see that we're not limiting ourselves just to using Visual Studio as a means to talk to TFS. For users who aren't cutting code, who are not doing development or testing, such as project managers, graphic designers, we have tools that are already available that will talk to TFS. But these are, to a degree, still Microsoft-centric. They are predominantly running on Windows, though SharePoint isn't necessarily. You can access a SharePoint site from any web browser. But there's still users who could be developing in other platforms. So if we look over on the right-hand side of the slide, we see we have Team Explorer, which is the way that pretty much anything actually under the hood talks to TFS. It's part of Visual Studio. It's used by Office, so Office can talk to TFS. We have a web access client, so people can actually manage TFS from a web browser. This is a feature that's been greatly extended for the Dev 11 version, and there are other Dev Week presentations on this very subject, which I strongly suggest you have a look at. But we also have extensibility, which means an API is shipped that allows us to connect with any client that can talk to a .NET framework. But still, that doesn't address a large proportion of the development environment. If you're developing in Java, a .NET client is not particularly what you're looking for. This is why, a couple of years ago, Microsoft purchased a product that they renamed as Team Explorer Everywhere, TEE. And this is, in effect, a Java implementation of Team Explorer. As a bonus, in the same way that Team Explorer provides you with a .NET API, Team Explorer Everywhere provides you with a Java API. So this means we now have a whole range of ways to connect to a TFS server. If In the box on the right, we can see our TFS server. It's been exploded out to its component parts. So we have a TFS application tier. We have its underlying database engine running SQL. We also have a reporting services instance that allows us to access the reports. And we also have a SharePoint instance that's providing dashboards and the like, all of them talking back to either the application tier or the underlying SQL engine. This means our clients out on the left can connect in a variety of ways. You can connect to reporting services or SharePoint or actually the application tier from any web browser. So giving anybody on any practical internet device the ability to come in and view reports, look at work items, edit work items, etc. But then the two primary ways people are going to come in, we have the existing Windows client coming in via the .NET API, which has been there since TFS came out. But we now have the ability for a Java client coming in via a Java API or Team Explorer Everywhere to talk to the same TFS front end. Now you will notice here I have a box marked Web Services, and it is important to note, do not, from a Java client or a Windows client, attempt to talk direct to the web services. Now, you may think, well, the web services, they're web services. I can connect to them from anything. That's the idea of web services. But this isn't the case here. Unfortunately, these web services aren't constructed to do atomic functions. There isn't a web service call that says, check in these 10 files. You have to make a number of web service calls. And this is what the APIs do. They wrapper up all of the commands that are required of the web service in a reliable and trustworthy manner. So you should always make your connections through that way. Now, this doesn't mean that there aren't ways of talking direct to a TFS web service from a client that can't use the API. There is the TFS OData interface, which is downloadable from Codeplex, which is something you can have a look at if you want to expose a RESTful format of TFS data. So that's another option open to you, but not one I'm going into any detail today. So what does this all mean? How does this behave if I'm a Java developer? So what we'll do now is the easiest way is to show. So I'll do a demo of loading a Java app inside Eclipse, and we'll put that into TFS. So here we have a copy of Ubuntu running inside a VirtualBox VM. I'm using this to show that because these clients are Java-based, they will run on anything that runs Java. Linux, Mac OS, any of the things that you might want to use. We're now no longer limited to running on a Windows platform. Now, of course, if you're an Eclipse developer who's still targeting a Windows operating system, there's no reason why you can't use the Windows version of Eclipse. It's a Java app. As long as you have a Java runtime, you're fine. So I'm opening my copy of Eclipse. It's asking me about what workspace. Now, here's an area that starts to get a little confusing, and that is that Eclipse has meanings for the word workspace, and for projects, and for team. And unfortunately, so does TFS. And the meanings aren't necessarily the same. So here we're talking about an Eclipse workspace. So we have a workspace that's just for this project. You can think of it as a folder if you're not used to Eclipse. It's just a local folder where I'm going to store stuff for this project. Eclipse will load. Now, I've already installed the Eclipse plugin on this machine, but if I hadn't, I would go in, hit help, go install software, and I would install by pulling information in from a repository. Now, the Eclipse plugin is effectively shipped as a zip file. This is downloaded from MSDN to get the plugin for TEE. Now, I can't stress enough here that this is just a standard Eclipse plugin. So I'm using the Java configured version of Eclipse, but if you have any product that's based on the Eclipse framework, there is no reason why you cannot use it with TEE, as long as it still retains the Eclipse plugin model and it hasn't been disabled for some reason. So this means, though this demo is Java-based, you can still target any system that uses Eclipse using this same plugin. So, this is an empty workspace, nothing's been done on it as yet, so I just close the welcome screen, and the first thing I'm actually going to do is I'm going to add the extra views, the windows in here, for Team Explorer. So if I go to Window, Show View, Other, I can go down to the bottom, I can see all the various views that are available to me, and because I've installed the plugin, we see Team Foundation Server. If I scroll down on that, we can see we have four options. We have gated check-in, pending changes, and these are handled automatically, they're shown when's needed, and the important one is Team Explorer. Now you'll notice here that we see Team Explorer and Team Explorer 2010. For those of you who've looked at TFS 2010, Dev 11, with Visual Studio Dev 11, you'll notice that Team Explorer has changed. It looks quite different now. Currently, I'm using the beta release here of Team Explorer for Dev 11. They have both the old and the new versions of Team Explorer in here. This is just an artifact of the beta. When it actually ships, we will only have one Team Explorer in there. And equally, if you installed the Visual Studio 2010 equivalent version of Team Explorer, you'd only see one Team Explorer, but it would be the one that looks like the 2010 version. So I'm going to choose to use the new version, the Dev 11 version, and I hit add. So it's added a new pane. Now, just because I want some space, I'm just going to dock that over on this side now. If I open that out, I'm now able to connect to a TFS server. So it goes in. I can go and declare all the servers I want. You see, I have a whole variety of servers here, but I can pick one off the list. I'm going to pick mine. Now, this is a local one. Now, obviously, I'm running on an Ubuntu box here, which isn't federated into my Active Directory in any way. So it's prompting me with login details. So I have to log in to my TFS server, providing normal AD credentials. So it's going off and trying to connect to the server, which is spun up. And it's found a TFS team project collection. I obviously could have many, and a number of TFS team projects. I'm going to use my TFS 11 Scrum one. Now, this is a standard TFS team project using the defaults that are out the box. So nothing clever at all. It's a point that's changed between Dev 10 and Dev 11 of TFS. And that is that the default used to be MSF Agile. It's now moved over to the new Scrum template. So it's just one thing to watch out for. The MSF Agile is still there if that's what you wish to use. But as I say, Scrum is now the new default. So I can hit finish on that. And we can see I'm now connected in a manner, a tab-based Team Explorer, which has all the settings that I need for my project that looks very similar to the Team Explorer that we have within Visual Studio 11. And I'm looking at the same TFS server. So if I go in here, I can see that I have two builds called Sample 1 and Sample 2. If I go back here and look at my builds, I can see I have two builds called Sample 1 and Sample 2. I can do all of the normal operations that I would expect to do inside TFS. Nothing has really changed. If I come to home, I go into work items, I can create a new work item. So I'll create a new product backlog item. Give myself a little more space here to do it. You see, it's all embedded inside the IDE in exactly the same manner as it is if you're working in Visual Studio. So I'll come in and give it a title. Just call it the Dev Week new feature, and I can just choose to save that work item. Obviously, normally I would fill in far more details, but for a quick demo, that will do, and we'll just remember that their work item number is 156. So I've got all of my normal operations in here connecting to TFS. So as an Eclipse user, I haven't had to come out of Visual Studio, but I actually want to get some source code into here. I actually want to load stuff up. So if I go into the Package Explorer, and I go into the import option inside Eclipse, I can import an existing project. So I actually have one stored as a zip file, so I want to import an existing project into this workspace. It asks me where the file is, and it's currently in my downloads area, and it's that zip file. It's found that there's a project inside, and I pull that in. So you can see now, inside this workspace, I now have a copy of a Java project. Now, I just like to make sure it compiles and tests. So if I right-click on the tests and I go run as JUnit test, it'll quickly compile the application, run through and make sure all my tests are passing. So that's all looking quite good. Everything looks green. So I'm reasonably confident my product has been imported okay. It builds and I can run unit tests. So now I'd like to actually place that into TFS. How am I going to do that? Well, here's another area where we start to get a little bit of confusion. So if I right-click on the product and I go down to the Team menu, now this is Team in Eclipse. It has nothing to do with TFS at this point because you want to share stuff with your team. And we pick Share Project. it brings up a list of all of the source control plugins that are available in Eclipse. Now here, again, I stress, it's just another source control plugin as far as Eclipse is concerned. So my copy of Eclipse knows how to handle CVS, Git, and Team Foundation Server. At this point, I could pick any one of those three repositories. I'll pick Team Foundation Server. So it goes off. Because I've already authenticated by joining the team project, it doesn't bother to prompt me again. Otherwise, it would. And it would say, right, where do you want to put it in your source control structure? Well, I want to put it in the TFS 11 project. I'd like to put it in the Java area. And I'd like to call it, we'll call it DevWeek Billing Service, just so it's obvious which one it is. So we're going to bob that in there. What tells us exactly where the stuff's going to go, and it bobs the files in. Now, this is where we get one point that people from some other source control systems get a little confused on, especially people coming from SourceSafe and the like. In SourceSafe, the act of adding a file checked it in as well. That isn't the case with TFS. TFS is a two-stage check-in, so I've now added the files, but they haven't been checked in as yet. So I can now come in, it's saying I've got all of these files, and I can choose to check them in. Now, I have the option of putting in a comment, so this is the first check-in. I can also, and this is the big advantage of TFS over other source control providers that only do source control because it does the whole of the ALM process. What it also will allow me to do is associate my check-in with some work items. So if I go in here and I run a TFS work item query, and I'll just search one of the standard ones, so we'll just search the product backlog. We can see that new product backlog item that we just created. I can associate my check-in with that. So that means with TFS, I'm checking in these files, these 50-odd files, and I'm also checking in a comment, and I'm also checking in an association with a work item. This is what's called a change set. This is an atomic unit that's being checked in. It will either all be checked in or it won't. There is no middle ground, which helps us retain integrity for what's going on the system. And we can navigate through all of this later so we can see what was checked in, what work items are associated with it. Now, if we're looking on here, we also see couple of other tabs. One is that there are no check-in notes that we have to have required in here. You can actually say people have to add extra notes. But equally, there's this concept of policy warnings. You can actually set up TFS so that it will insist that people meet certain requirements when they're checking in their items into TFS. Common ones are that you must have associated with a work item, or that you must have added a comment, or you can write your own. These are fully supported in Eclipse, in TEE, in exactly the same way as they are in Visual Studio with the .NET version. The one point to beware is, though, that if you write a custom check-in policy for a .NET client, you also have to rewrite the same custom policy for Java, because obviously the Java implementation can't run the .NET versions and vice versa. So that's one point to consider in that space. So if we go back to our list of files, we can now choose to check in our files. It's worth mentioning, just before I do that, we also do have the option of shelving. For those of you who are new to TFS, you might not be aware of shelving. Think of shelving as a private temporary check-in. So at the moment, these files only exist on my workstation. So if I lost my workstation, or the hard drive crashed, or the like, all of the work would be lost. But I might not be ready to check something in straight away into TFS because it's not finished. So what I might do is I might choose to shelve it, which is to put it on TFS so it's only available to myself or people I choose to have access to. It doesn't get committed to the main branch. So this is a way that if I was going on holiday for a couple of weeks, I could put partially completed work up on the server. Or if I had to stop what I was doing and pick up another emergency job, I could park the partially completed work while I pulled down something else to work on. So what we're going to do now is we're going to just check in. Now, Eclipse is quite chatty on dialogues until you tell them to shut up. So I've left them all on at the moment. And we can see our work has now been checked in. If we go back to Team Explorer now and we run the query list, we can see there's our query. We double click on it. We can scroll down and scroll across and have a look at the links. Let's just make that a little bit bigger. And we can see that we have associated here a change set And if we open it, we can see the files that we've just checked in. So this gives us our traceability. And equally, I can come over here. I can go in on Visual Studio Dev 11. I can go into the work items list. I can run the product backlog in here. I can do exactly the same. I can see the same work item that I created, and I can come in and see the same list of changed files. And it's pulled it in over on the side here to do a slightly different UI that's showing me what was pulled in. So, you see, we're committing everything to one location, which means we have unified control. It doesn't matter where the source is. So, if we go back into Eclipse, though, just being able to put the stuff under source control isn't really enough. That's not the whole of a solution. We need to be able to do other things. Now, we can obviously check code out to edit it and modify the unit tests, but a really useful feature is to be able to check that the code that's being checked in is automatically able to be built. Now, in the Java space, there are tools to allow continuous integration, as it's called. Historically, you probably use cruise control. That's sort of been superseded by Hudson. But behind the scenes, your building is probably going to be done with using Ant or Maven. These underlying build mechanisms are still supported with TFS. So even though we have a TFS build box that is running on a Windows platform, it is capable of building a Java app for you. Now, if for some reason you need to not build on a Windows platform, there are ways of doing that using the TFS build extensions, which is a community project up on Codeplex, has a number of add-ins to the build system that allows you to remote out onto other operating systems to perform build operations there. Again, I'm not discussing that in this presentation, but if that is an issue for you, please go and have a look at that site. So, what we'd like to do now, though, is create a TFS build definition that will allow us to make sure that every time somebody checks some code in, the build still functions. So to do that, inside Eclipse, we hit New Build Definition. We give it a name. We'll call it the Dev Week Build. We then get to choose the features. Now, if you've used TFS, you'll realize that this dialog is the same dialog. It gives the same questions as you're used to seeing in Visual Studio. So it then asks, well, how do you want this build to run? Do you want to just run it manually? Well, you might. Do you want continuous integration? Now, continuous integration means every time you check in files, it will run this build. The files will be checked in whether the build works or not. But you will know very quickly that the build fails if bad code is checked in. Now, for small teams, continuous integration is quite a good way of working, because even if someone does break the build, there's a small enough team that you can say, oh, hold on, I've broken the build, I'll fix it quickly, don't worry, it'll be fine. But as soon as your team gets larger or you aren't co-located, say someone's checking in code at Friday on a 5 o'clock for someone to pick up in a different time zone, you don't really want bad code ever to be checked in. So there you may look at gated check-in. Now, a gated check-in is a build where we attempt to do the build before we complete the check-in. So what happens is when we request a check-in, it actually shelves it, as I mentioned before, like a private branch. It does the build, and if that build is successful, it then checks it in properly. If it's not successful, the user is told, no, your build has failed, and therefore you've got to fix it before you're allowed to check in. Now, my view is, if you want to enforce things like check-in policies and making sure certain tests are passed and code coverage and all those things, a gated check-in is probably a better route forwards, because you don't have to worry so much about whether it's supported on different platforms. A lot of stuff can be driven on the build engine. But you pay your money, you take your choice on this as to whether continuous or gated works well for you. You may have noticed I skipped over rolling build there. Rolling build is just a continuous integration build that won't run more often than a certain number of times an hour or every few minutes. Where this works well is if, say, your continuous integration build takes 15 minutes, but you get a new build every 10 minutes, you've got this never-ending list of work to be done. With this, you can say, yes, I know, but just batch up my builds and only run them once an hour. The downside is that if you've got three or four builds batched together and pushed in for the rolling build and the build breaks, which bit of code has broken it, it'll take a little bit longer for you to work out what's going on. The final build is the old traditional, which is a scheduled build. So we just want the build to go off Every night, every week, whatever. What you'll find in most teams is you need a layered approach to building. So you may well have a CI build that checks this code, compiles, and runs a few unit tests, but it's quick, so people get very fast feedback. And then you run a more thorough build on a nightly basis or a weekly basis or whatever to actually be the build that's passed on further through the system to manage your release process. So for this purposes, we'll show a gated build. So just select that. We then have to set the workspace. Now, this is the TFS meaning of workspace. And a TFS meaning of workspace is associating an area under source control with an area on the local hard drive. So what we're going to do is we'll say the only bit of the source control that we're interested in is the bit we've just created. So that area. Now, the reason I've actually been in there, because we could have just picked higher up the tree, up at the project level, the TFS scrum level. But the reason I've gone further down in the tree is because we only want this build to trigger if something's checked in this folder. Anything else is irrelevant to this build, so there's no point having a wider scope than you need. And it's always worth doing this, because this will stop a lot of unnecessary builds going off when the code actually hasn't changed. So that can be a good way to manage load on your build box. We then need to tell it which build controller to use. Now, this is a TFS build controller, which is actually running on the same box in this case, but it could be anywhere. Now, this is a scalable architecture. You can have as many build controllers as you want, and any build controller manages any number of agents. By default, when you install a TFS build system, it adds one controller and one agent per core on the box you've installed upon. So it's a good way to scale out your build services. So I only have to worry about submitting to the build controller. It will find a suitable free machine for me. Now, if I've chosen that some of my build machines can do Java and some can't, there's a mechanism called tagging that allows me to set a tag on a build agent to say, yes, I can accept Java work. And another one that maybe says, yes, I can accept BizTalk work. And they'll accept general builds because they can do those. But all of the BizTalk work will go to the BizTalk agent and all the Java work will go to the Java agent. So it helps us to manage our load. What I do need to do is tell it where to put the resorts. So I need to give a UNC drop location to actually store my results in. If I didn't want to actually store the results, I just uncheck that box. Why would you not want your build results, you may be thinking? Well, if it's a continuous integration build that is only used as a validation, you probably don't care for the files that are actually built out at the end of the process. All you're interested in is, did the test pass or fail? Did the logs pass or fail? And all of that will be stored inside TFS. So you may well choose to disable that feature if you don't need it. Now, and then we move on to the bit that is a bit different between Visual Studio and TEE. And this is the way the build works. Now, with TFS 2010 and later, the build is managed via a Windows workflow, which you can add custom activities into. If you upgraded a TFS 2008 build, which was based on an MS Build model, it used a thing called the upgrade template, which meant that the new workflow mechanism handled all of the getting and updating of TFS, but in the middle it still called your core MS build tasks. Well, this is the way the Java implementation has been done. We have a workflow on the server, and this workflow deals with doing a get latest from the server and check-ins and check-outs and updating all of the results and the logs and everything. But the actual heavy lifting of doing the build is passed off to a Java build application. So I need to pick which one. And the two options that are available to me are Ant and Maven. Now, to make this work, you do have to install Java on your build box, obviously, and you also have to install the build extensions that are available as part of the TFS Power Tools. So if you go and search for TFS 2010 or Dev 11 Power Tools when it becomes available, you'll find all of the Power Tools for Windows, but you'll also find links to the build extensions, which are the tools for Maven and Ant. So I'm going to do a Maven build. So I'll pick that. And it then goes and looks in the workspace that I defined, and it looks for a build file. So a POM file is a Maven item, and that's actually my Ant build file above it, so I could have chosen either. So I'm going to select that file, and it goes off and it configures my build. So effectively, all it's going to do is the TFS build is going to do a get latest of all of the files, stick them on the drive of the build machine, It will then say, Maven, please run everything in here. Now, for those of you who are not aware of Maven, Maven deals with resource management as well and dependency management. So what it will do is if I have any dependencies, such as a graphics library or something, Maven will go off to the internet and pull that down and cache it on the build box for me, specific versions. So the first time you run a Maven build on a new build agent, it might be quite sluggish, because it has to go and find a whole pile of different bits that it needs. But in general, builds after that get a good deal faster. So the final one we have on here is retention policy. So again, with TFS builds, we can choose how long builds are kept. So basically, the defaults are to keep the last 10 builds, whether they pass, fail, or whatever. You can always override this. So even though you've, say, got a daily build that's scheduled to be deleted after 10 builds. When, if there's a build that you're going to release for UAT testing or into production, you can just tag that build, which I'll show you in a moment, just to say that build is kept forever. So if I now go OK on that, it has created me a new build definition. And I can test this definition to make sure it still works. So I just queue a build. Now, normally I could just hit queue, but if I do that, I actually get an error. Because I told this was a gated build, it assumes a shelf set's going to be involved. Well, it's not. So I'm just going to choose from the drop-down and say, no, just build the latest code that's in source control. So the stuff we've put in. And you can see I can override quite a few of the parameters at this moment if I want to. So I kick that build off. So while I'm in here, we've got the build. But if I double-click on this, I can actually launch off to get a bit more detail. And you can see there, I've gone in, it's loaded Firefox, and it's showing me various builds that have gone off. So that build is there, and it's still running. Oh, and it's ran, it's 14 seconds, and we see it's completed. If I wanted to see the detailed log, we can see a detailed log of what has gone on. I can see all the various different builds. And what this has actually done is I have been launched into the new web front end of Visual Studio TFS Dev 11. So this is the new front end. So if I can actually come in and I can start to manage my work items in here. So I mentioned how users who are not on Windows platforms can quite merrily come in and start to do work within TFS. Well, this is the way they would do it. They just open their web browser and they hit the site. I can do sprint planning. I can create work items. I can create builds. I can browse the code. I can move things around in my priorities in my build log. I can open features. I can do all of these various different things. So the browser becomes very much a first-class citizen for doing work. Historically, there were third-party tools for TFS that meant working in a browser became far easier, but it was still probably not the place most people would go for many of their operations. I've always found big batch operations of work item management is easiest in Excel. That's my personal view. What we're sort of starting to see now with the new TFS Dev 11 release is that the browser becomes a far better home, and we start to see a lot of these draggable lists making heavy use of jQuery to make it a very responsive web browser-based way of working. So that is an area to certainly have a look at, because that obviously makes it platform agnostic in the sense of you just pick your browser of choice to work with. So if we go back into Eclipse, let's actually do some development now. So we're going to go in here and we need to change one of our features. So if we go into our main code and drill down and we find our method, I'm going to change this hello world method. You see, now as soon as I've typed that in, just like in Visual Studio, we have a marker to say the file has been checked out. We can see that the file's been edited down in our pending changes. And that's fine. I'm going to check that. I'm going to save that file, and I'm now just going to check those changes in. Now, obviously, I could have made as many changes as I wanted to. There's no limit there. So I could have any list, and I could put my comments in, and I could associate with my work items and all those good things. But just for speed, I'm just going to hit check in. So it warns me it's going to check in pending changes. And because we've configured a gated check-in for this folder of this branch of code, it warns me this is a gated check-in. It's about to go off. You go, okay. Now, it gives me some options. One is to preserve my changes locally, because it's checking in stuff and it's putting it on a shelf set to do that. Now, I might be perfectly happy with that, and I might be going away for a coffee now, so I'm not going to touch my machine. So I don't care that the changes on my machine are kept locally as well. But it might be I've got another job to do, so I might actually be wanting to say, no, these are the stuff I want to submit, but I'd like to then go and get some other bit of code. So effectively, I could choose to not preserve the local changes, it would just get me the latest version. I also have the option to bypass the gated check-in, which will push stuff straight into TFS. Now, unlike check-in policies, which can be bypassed by any user, this requires you having certain rights. So you can actually block users doing this. Occasionally, you do need to do it to fix something, that code that you've somehow managed to get in a state that is unbuildable and you can't get a fix in for it. But it's pretty rare. You shouldn't need to do it that often. So I'm just going to tell it, yeah, go off, do your builds. That'll be fine. And you can see it now loads the gated check-in window. Remember how I said the pending changes and the gated tend to pop in as needed? And we'll just leave that running for a moment. While we're waiting for it, because we can see it's running, it shouldn't take that long, we can see up here, I haven't minimized the task list. And now this is a Mylin task list tool, which is a feature of Eclipse. It's an add-in for Eclipse that is quite popular in the Java community. And Mylin is effectively a local to-do task workbench. So you can use it to surface the work that you need to do. Now, this can be connected to TFS. It requires a plugin to do it, which is a chargeable plugin that's available from Mylin, but it is available. So again, a key point here is, yes, we're adding source control functionality and work item management into Eclipse, but we're not aiming to change the way that your Eclipse developers want to do their work. So we haven't changed anything about the way package explorers and all of those work. And features such as Mylin are also leveraged if that's what you choose. Now, we can see while I was talking, a dialogue came up. It warned me that my build failed. So it gives me the option, what do I want to do? Do I want to get my shelf set back? Or do I want to just ignore it? Well, as I didn't change any code, I can happily hit ignore here. So I'm just going to remove the changes I did, save that, and I'll try and check it in again. It goes off, it says it's another gated check-in. Now, hopefully this one should work because the code base is fine. The reason it failed was because my unit tests didn't match my production code. So you may be wondering at this point, hold on, but those unit tests have been written in JUnit. How's that been done? Well, if we bob out and look at Visual Studio here, and we go in and start to have a look at the builds, we can now see our various builds that went off. So we can see that we have a test run in here, and we can see that one test run ran, and 90% of our tests passed, i.e. 10 passed. So we show we have one failure, and there's our build message. So here I can see, looking in Visual Studio at the build report, that there was a failure. Because the JUnit tests have been imported into TFS as a normal set of unit tests. Interestingly, my build has failed again. So what happened there? So let's have a look. I obviously haven't checked my code incorrectly, so my build has still failed again. You see, the complete aim here of gated checking is to stop those stupid errors. It's to stop those, oh, I've done it and I checked it in, oh, and I forgot that, and then the next check-in is, oh, just fixing the thing I forgot last time. The idea is you get a clean check-in that has everything done. So I can go back here and I could fix my code, so I could check it in, but I'm sure you don't need to see me checking in all of these various items. So what I could just do here is go down to the file, and I can just, in the team menu, I get all my TFS options, so I can actually just undo my pending changes, and my strange edits have gone away. So that's looking at it from inside the IDE. If I minimize that, you might still want to talk and do work on a Linux box or a Mac from the command line. You know, you might be in an environment that isn't Eclipse. Well, that's still an option for you. When you download TE, you also get a whole pile of command line tools. You just unzip them. They're a set of Java tools. So if I just run a ls there and I just run tf, It goes off and it gives us a normal set of TF commands. So I can start to check in, I can do, so if I do, as it suggests there, TFF help check in, it gives me my various options. Oh, sorry, swapping operating systems too much. There we are, there's the options for check in. Now, that is exactly the same as if I pull up a Windows box here and I go TF, I get the same idea, TF. There we are. There's the TF check-in command. It's available on both. So we have a way of working from the command line in both Java platforms and .NET platforms. And this is just leveraging the API. So that means there's a whole range. If I certainly have clients who are using the .NET command line tools because they do embedded code development. They're working with Assembler and the various collection of tools that are required to do that for embedded software development for manufacturing systems. They can still work with TFS quite merrily from the command line because it's not that their IDEs don't support plugins for source code management. They don't have any IDEs. They're living in a land of Notepad and Vim and the like. So there is a whole range of tools there that can extend down to anybody. Now, if you're actually running on Windows, one of the power tools that's available to be downloaded from Visual Studio Gallery in the TFS Power Tools actually adds the functionality of managing check-ins and check-outs to Windows Explorer, so it becomes a click, left-click, right-click option to get the same options as you see inside Eclipse or TFS. So that is another area that's open to you. So there's a whole range of ways of being able to support software development, either in the Eclipse plugin or just from the command line. So, to return to some slides. So, what have we seen? That TFS can be used in a whole variety of ways. It can be worked with integrated IDEs. So, TFS, out the box, supports Visual Studio 2005 up to vNext, Dev 11. Now, to get it to talk to newer versions, so if you wanted TFS Visual Studio 2005 to talk to TFS 2010, it does involve you putting a patch on it. In the same, you need to put a patch on it to talk to Dev 11. Now, these are in general called the forward compatibility patches. So normally what you need to do in the case of Visual Studio 2005-2008 is put all of the service packs that are available to it, and then you store the forward compatibility patch. And this allows you to then type in the correct URL to talk to a new TFS server, whether it be on-premises or up in the cloud. So those are all options open to you. We've seen in the demo that we can use any IDE that's based on Eclipse. I used a Java build. Eclipse is always built in Java, but a build of Eclipse that was targeted for Java developers. But I've seen it used for other platforms without any difficulty, as long as the customization of Eclipse hasn't removed the plugin functionality from it, which is very rare that someone should do that. We also have functionality to talk to older plugin models. So they're also available on the Power Tools. You can download the MSSCCI plugin. Now, this allows VB6 and Visual Studio 2003 to talk to TFS of whichever version when suitably patched and the suitable version is being used. Many companies still have VB6 code in production, and it probably isn't going away that soon. Visual Studio 2003 you would have if you have .NET 1.1 specific code, because unlike later versions of Visual Studio, there's no multi-targeting based into it. So those could be reasons. For current applications that may need that plugin, there is MATLAB and Enterprise Architect. Both make use of that plugin model. So if you're using either of those two products to talk to TFS, you do need to look at this piece of connectivity. Specifically for MATLAB, only a few months ago, a new 64-bit version of the MSSCCI interface was released because MATLAB went 64-bit. So this is still an area that is being developed to keep up to date with other market-leading products that could make use of TFS for either work item or source control tracking. We've mentioned as we went along that you can use Microsoft Office to connect through to TFS for managing work items. Excel and Project are supported. You can use Office 2007 and 2010 out the box. It is possible to make Office 2003 talk to the current versions of TFS. There's blog posts on it. You do have to use what some of the older versions of Team Explorer and jump through a few hoops to make that work, because it is targeted on the newer versions, but is available to you. Again, there are third-party tools that if you wanted to make Outlook talk to TFS, that's possible, but that involves third-party tools that have been developed via the extensibility framework. We've seen that you've command line tools. So as long as you can get to a command line that can either run .NET or Java, you have the ability to interact with TFS for file check-in, check-out. In both of these cases, that doesn't allow you to edit work items per se, but you just load your browser to do that. So if you're in a command line, say you're writing assembly code or writing C code with all command line driven, you just check in, check out using command lines and manage your work items with any browser that's available on the platform that you're working on. And of course, the final one that I mentioned was that if you're on Windows and you install the Power Tools, you also get integration for Team Explorer. And this can be useful for people like graphic designers who are using products that have no concept of what a check-in or a check-out is. They just save to the local file system, but they can still manage their files in and out. So very useful for video production. And that sort of huge files that people don't want to be fiddling around in the command line, but they would like a way of integrating cleanly through. And of course, we have web browsers, which I've touched on throughout, that the web browser, especially in the Dev 11 wave, is becoming very much the primary way of doing much of your project management, product backlog grooming, work item planning, and visualization of how your product is succeeding. So, what can you do now? Well, you can go and download TEE, and you can download versions of TFS as well, to try on your machine. Now, this raises an interesting point. Historically, TEE cost money. It was about $300. So if you were a developer who wanted to use it, you had to buy TEE for $300 and to connect to TFS. As of a couple of weeks ago, so that would be early March, this was no longer the case. TEE is now a free product. You can freely download it. You still need a TFS CAL to connect to a TFS server, but you don't need to buy the software. So in the same way that you can download Team Explorer for free, you can download Team Explorer everywhere for free. So where does this work? Well, A, it removes a barrier of cost to implementing it, and it means that if you're a Java developer, solely a Java developer, to access TFS, you now just need to buy a TFS CAL. If you're a developer who touches all sorts of different things and already has Visual Studio with MSDN, well, you already have your CAL included there. So now, if you want to link your Java development into the same TFS, you need nothing else, you need no extra licenses, you just download TEE and install it. So the link you can see there takes you to the TEE homepage where you can download eval versions or whatever that you need. It makes more detail on the various options that are available to you. If you'd like to read, effectively, a version of this presentation, I did a guest post on the UK Visual Studio Team blog, and you can see a shortened link to that. And that basically goes through what I've been talking about today with some screenshots and talks of different ways of using the system. And finally, there's the link to the Power Tools that I keep touching upon as I've been going along. So there, keep an eye on the Power Tools. You do remember you have to bring down the appropriate version for the version of TFS you're using. So if you're using TFS 2010, you need the 2010 Power Tools. If you're 2008 or 2008 Power Tools, and when Dev 11 is released, you'll need the Dev 11 Power Tools. So there's plenty of links to go and have a look at. And so with that, I hope you found this a useful presentation to get you going on using TEE and thinking about using TFS as a unified source control and ALM solution, irrespective of the development platform you're using. Because as products go forward today, we're all developing cloud applications that need to be surfaced on a whole range of platforms using different architectures and development languages. And TEE is a product that allows you to get in and use all of these platforms, talking back to a single centralized TFS resource management system. So you're storing all of your source, your development code, and all of your work item tracking with a single unified build, so you can pull everything back together in one place.